Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
Good morning, and thanks for tuning in to The Gardening Show. I'm Ann Holliday with Bob Harris. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Ann.
And as you heard, if you have a question for Bob, you can give us a call at 368-9372, 368-WESB, or you can send us an email at garden@wesb.com, or you can go to facebook.com/WESB1075, and you can find Bob right there and ask a question under the live video. And Bob, we got a question for you from an unusual place today. I grew up in Bradford, PA Facebook page. People were talking about, go ahead, we'll let you talk.
Okay, yeah, and this one's a very difficult question, but I'm going to do my best here. I might be able to help. Mike says all his squash family plants seem to only be setting male flowers. And normally, my patty pan squash set 40 to 60 squash on 8 plants. So far this year, he's only gotten 10 from 2 plants, and the other 8 set all male flowers, and the same with his cucumbers. And his zucchini, yellow acorn, butternut, squash have only set male flowers. I could see the possibility of getting one package of all male seeds, but 10 different packages from 2 different companies, he has a question mark. So I want to start with the cucumbers, because to me that's going to be the easiest one to answer. There are cucumbers out there, a couple varieties that have been hybridized for the big farmers, but the seed can be bought for the home gardener too. And the one is a Burpee number 2 hybrid, it's called. And the other one I just can't remember the name, but it's from a different company. And what they are cucumbers that have all female flowers on them, so that they're big producers. And that's why they have come up with those for a farmer that grows a lot of cucumbers. But now, usually in that seed pack, along with the ones that only produce female flowers, there'll be a few that will produce the male and female flower. Now, there's to my knowledge, there is no such thing as all male flowers, like Mike is describing here, but there is a possibility there is. I don't know why anyone would develop a seed that would develop only male flowers. But with the cucumbers, they have come up with a variety that just produces female. And in that seed pack, though, they always throw in, maybe there's 20 seeds. So there might be 4 of the regular cucumbers that will produce male and female. So when it does produce those male flowers, it can pollinate all the females. So those plants that have all females have a real big productive year, because all of them get pollinated. I hope I made that clear. Now, on squash, I've never heard of that. Oh, by the way, that does have a term for it, too, these plants. Gynoecious, they are, where they'll be all female flowers. But with the squash, I've never heard of that, and I'm not aware of them developing anything like that. But the squash and the cucumber, usually the first bunch of flowers that come out are all male, and then eventually it starts to develop female. And, of course, then the bee has to take over.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens early in the morning, about just after sunrise, where the bees will come in, go to the male flower, collect the pollen, then go to the female and spread that pollen there. So if you don't have the bees, you won't get pollination. But a couple other factors that might come in to play here, too. I would suggest to Mike that he do a soil test.
Mm.
He may be lacking in a nutrient that will help the plant, what we call initiate or make female flowers. A female flower takes a whole lot more energy than a male flower does. And if the plant doesn't have all that energy, even though you've cared for it and watered it, if it doesn't think, and I'm saying think, if it doesn't think it has enough energy to produce that female flower, and with that female flower, the fruit, then it won't produce them. So That'd be another thing I would do, is do a soil test and see if you're lacking in the right food available for them, or even the right mineral that may help develop the female flower.
So if he wants to do a soil test, does he like call Penn State Cooperative Extension, or how does he go about doing that?
Yeah, and they'll mail a test kit to you. They're very inexpensive, and with directions on how to do the soil test. And you'll send that in, and of course they'll send you back a report on what is in your soil and what you should do to make the soil better for that specific crop that you're growing in there. Now, you don't have to say just squash. You can say vegetable garden. It'd probably be handy if you would say squash in there too. But, you know, whether you're doing a soil test for your lawn or your trees or your vegetable garden or flower garden, do fill that space and make sure you fill in all the spaces so they have all that information, because they all take a little bit of different type of soil and fertility in the soil. So that can be real important. So another thing that can be happening, though, too, Mike, is watering. I know a lot of us, and I'm one of them guys, too, that through the hot, dry time, we go out and water our garden. Maybe we do it a little too quickly. In my garden, I set up what they call a soaker hose, so I can just turn it on, and I really soak once in a while, not every time. I really soak the bed till water's coming out of it. It's a raised bed, till I see the water coming out of it. And that can be pretty important. A lot of us tend to just walk in and water, wet the top of the soil, so that if we go down a few inches, there may be a real dry layer. Well, that's where most of the feeder roots are going to be. And if it's dry there, then they're not getting the right amount of liquid, so they can't draw up all the nutrients they need, and of course they don't have the energy to produce those female flowers and then produce a good fruit. So it's real important that once in a while, I like to do it at least once a week, really soak my garden almost to the point where it starts to puddle, where it can't take any more water. Then the rest of the time you can just do the sprinkling like you normally do, watering can or the hose, whatever. And but getting that soil deep, down to a foot at least, maybe a foot and a half, is so important for that plant to do what it's supposed to do.
I remember my grandma just leaving the hose and going to do other things in the house or whatever, do laundry or whatever. Well, the garden would just, like you said, soak until it was puddling. So,
and then we did go through a time where it rained a lot here. Mm. And so I want to remind people that when we're fertilizing our plants, most of that fertilizer is what we call water soluble. So it dissolves in water and can get washed away in water. So through all those heavy rains, if we did fertilize our garden, and which we probably should have, it could have washed away most of that fertilizer, so the plant is left with only enough energy to produce those male flowers and not the female flower that takes a lot more energy.
Okay.
So that's a couple. I don't know if that really answered your question, Mike, but I would start with a soil test and see what your fertility of your soil is, and then I would double-check that seed pack on the cucumbers to see if you have one of those hybrids that is made to only produce a female flower without a male flower, so that there's no pollination occurring then. So check that. Let's see. He also says he rotates his crops every year. Excellent. And let's see. He did water 1 inch a week. That may not have been enough this year, depending on your soil, too. See, all soils are different. If you have a real clay-based soil, you can water and leave it alone for an extended period, because clay holds on to water a long period of time. If you have a sandy loam soil, then the water goes in there, drains away quickly. That soil dries out quickly. So depending on your soil type, which the soil test will tell you, will dictate how much water you need and how much fertility you may need in those beds.
Bob, we're going to go to the phones here.
Okay.
Good morning. Do you have a question for Bob?
Yes. My neighbors have a very large ornamental flowering tree. It's very old and it has been very beautiful. And a few years ago, a storm took down about a whole third of it, but the rest of the tree seemed to be doing really well. But now it's starting to look a little sick, and it's got a white, scaly crust on the bark. And someone told them that the best thing to do for that was try to without harming the bark in order to save the tree. But if they knew what it was, maybe there's something that can be done with some product or something.
Can you hold on, ma'am?
Can you, I hate to ask you this, but could you do that one more time? Could you give your question one more time?
Sure. My neighbors have a large ornamental flowering tree, and it's very old, and it's very big and beautiful, but about a few years ago, a storm took down about a third of it, but the rest of the tree seemed to be doing really well. But now it's kind of sick looking, and it's got a white, crusty scale on the bark. And it seems to be killing the tree. And they talked to someone who told them to try to peel that off without harming the bark, but that just doesn't seem like a solution. I was just wondering if it was a product or if this is a fungus or what it is.
Okay, that white scaly stuff on the trunk and branches is what we is you're describing is what we call lichen. And that really does no harm at all to the tree. Now, if it does become, it's a combination of bacteria and algae growing together. They form them masses. But if we do start to see a tree that is completely covered with it, that's a sign that tree is dying because they're feeding off the dead plant cells. That's what they like to do.
Mm-hmm.
And from what you described, that tree is dying. So it's just a coincidence that all this lichen is starting to grow all over it.
So there really is a lifespan for these trees.
Oh, yeah, there sure is. Every tree has a lifespan. And that lifespan in the forest is a much longer lifespan than the lifespan in your yard.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have lived where I live 46 years, and I think the bulk of that time that tree was over there.
Okay.
So it is a very old tree.
Yeah, and then been damaged quite a bit,
yeah,
too.
And the fact that a whole section of it went down.
Yeah. Yeah, and when a tree gets damaged, you know, of course that opens up for any fungal pathogens or bacteria, any disease to get in there, insects to get in there and start doing their damage. And that really shortens up the life of that tree.
Well, they're going to be very sad. They thought that if they could scrape all that stuff off, that the tree would be okay.
No, that really won't do a thing. Won't do a thing at all.
Okay, good to know. Well, thank you so much.
Well, you're welcome.
Thanks for calling.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, well.
Geez, I hate to give bad news like that.
Oh, no kidding. That's that's too bad.
But that lichen just occurs in nature everywhere. You know, we have a lot of it here, and it's a sign of clear, clean air also that this stuff can occur and grow. It even grows on rocks around here. So it's not taking energy out of the plant. You know, it's just that it's a nice spot to build a home.
Okay. Well, we are going to take a break and hear from our friends from Worth W. Smith, but we will be right back on The Gardening Show with Master Gardener Bob Harris.
If you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford. If it's time to seal your driveway, you'll find sealant, brushes, squeegees, everything you need for the job. They have a huge supply of railroad ties for your lawn and garden projects, leaf blowers in gas, battery, and corded electric models, and a brand new line of cordless Makita tools with interchangeable batteries. Your friends at Worth W. Smith hope you're staying safe and remind you to wear a mask, wash your hands, and observe social distancing whenever possible.
Gardening Show with Master Gardener Bob Harris. And as always, if you have a question for Bob, you can give us a call at 368-9372-368-WESB. Or you can send us an email at garden@WESB.com. Or you can go to facebook.com/WESB1075. And I have the number for the Penn State Cooperative Extension in Smethport if anybody needs it. It's 887-5613. And Bob, you were also going to talk about ripening vegetables today.
Yeah, but first, Ann.
Okay.
I thought of one more thing for Mike to check out. Because I get this problem, but it's not too severe at home quite often. The squash vine borer. You usually don't see the borer, and you don't see the eggs that it lays. And when the eggs hatch, those little worms will go right down to a vine. They chew into the vine. And, of course, that robs a lot of energy from the plant because they start feeding inside the plant they are. And they tunnel right through, and of course that robs a lot of energy, which can cause a plant not to be very fruitful. So that's one thing you may want to check into too. I know it's a little tough, you know. You got to get down right down there and look for a hole in the vine, and there may be a little like sawdust material coming out of the end of that hole, and then start to peel that vine open. And if you see that little white worm, you know, half inch long, 3/4 inch long, with kind of a black cap on its head, that's a squash vine borer. And, yeah, they'll rob a lot of energy from your plant and cause it not to be fruitful.
Okay.
So that was one other thing I had thought about, too. Now, I seem to get them at home. I try to take care of them when I do see them. I don't like to use any chemical sprays or anything on my plants, so I have to do a lot of hand picking. Now, it doesn't take much time, but it is, again, a timing thing. You're going to see them just at certain times of the day. The rest of the time, you're not going to see them, and that's usually around that. At my house, it's around 10 a.m. They happen to be fluttering around and looking for a good spot to lay their eggs. So hand picking and squish them, and you'll keep the population down to where your plant can produce. And mine is, you know, sorry to say, Mike, but my squash have probably done better this year than a lot of years that I can remember. But, yeah, I wanted to talk about ripening. So the process that goes on in ripening, a lot of fruits and vegetables, when they first come out, they're full of what we call tannins. That's tannic acid. That makes it very distasteful for animals and insects. It's very sour, very tart. It's an acid. And so once the fruit is ripened, and usually we pick fruit, and when I say fruit, I'm talking about even vegetables, not just apples and peaches and pears. We tend to pick them before they're really totally ripe, and that's fine. But when we do pick them, what I like to do is set them aside, usually in a darker place, most of my plant, vegetables, or fruits, in a darker, kind of cool spot, because then the process of those tannins will break down, and also the starches in the fruit will break down, and then they turn into sugars that make it a whole lot more tasteful. So that's a practice I do, you know, just like it's kind of similar to when you dig up your onions. You should always dig up your onions and you lay them aside, let them dry out for a day or two. Number one, it makes it easier to peel off the outer skins and clean the onion. But number two, it helps sweeten them by turning those starches into sugar and letting the tannins break down so they're not so bitter.
Okay.
But that can go for a lot of the vegetables. Now, I wouldn't do that with my beans and peas. I wouldn't do that with carrots, some of those. But the tomato, the onion, the corn. Corn's a real good one. You know, if you pick corn, let it set a couple days, and it'll become loaded with sugar rather than starch. Any of my squashes, I always let them set for a few days. Well, some of them may set all the way through the winter because that's a vegetable that stores for a long, long period of time. So that's just a hint on when you're picking and harvesting your vegetable garden. Maybe some of them you just want to set aside for a day before you put them in the refrigerator, because once you put them in the refrigerator, that process stops. And so they're going to taste the same as when you put them in as when you take them out. So I like to put them on the counter in a place where it doesn't get light, or if it does get some light, well, I throw a paper towel over it so that that process can start there and sweeten up. I guess I'm telling on myself. I like sweet things.
I kind of guess that.
So, yeah. So I like my vegetables to be as sweet as possible. And it's to me, it's better for your body to eat the sugars rather than the starches and the tannins. It's better for your digestion. So that's what I practice. And maybe you want to try it and see if you can tell the difference between picking a tomato that you picked off the vine, put it right in the refrigerator, or one you picked off the vine and set it on the counter for a day or two.
I was thinking about the corn.
Corn, yeah. Corn is real
corn,
important there.
Yeah.
Real important there. And, you know, and it was hybridized to do that, because it's a long process to pick corn in the field. A farmer has to pick it. Now he's got to find transportation to get it from his field or his farm to the processing plant. And then from there, they got to figure out transportation to get it from there to the distribution centers. And then from the distribution centers, they got to get it to the grocery store. Then you got to get it to your house. So that can take a while. And if corn has been hybridized to learn to ripen through that five-day process, and by the time it gets to your table, then it's reached its highest sugar point. Of course, at our house, we even like to set it one more day just on the counter, not in the refrigerator, because the refrigerator stops that process. We like to set it on the counter to sweeten up just a little bit more.
Oh, yeah. There's nothing better than sweet. Well, there's a lot of, I always say this. Oh, there's nothing better than homegrown tomatoes and
yeah,
sweet corn and everything else. But fresh vegetables, I mean, you
yeah,
can't beat them.
You can't. Yep. Especially when they're grown right and harvested right and then processed right.
Okay. If you have a question for Bob, you can give us a call at 368-9372, 368-WESB. You can send us an email at garden@WESB.com, or you could go to facebook.com/WESB1075 and ask your question there. So, Bob, anything else about ripening vegetables?
Yeah, yeah. So a lot of people will come up with a question of, my tomatoes aren't ripening. So one thing we can do, we usually don't like to pick a tomato till it's at least what we call blushing, a little bit of color, not just solid green. It'll ripen really freely then if we just set it on a counter, or better yet, in a paper bag with a little slice of of apple in it. Apple has a chemical in it, as that slice of apple is rotting away. It gives off ethylene gas. Ethylene gas initiates the ripening process much quicker. So if we do that, we can get that tomato to ripen, even if it didn't want to ripen on the vine. And sometimes it just doesn't want to ripen on the vine. So instead of wasting it, or, you know, you can have fried green tomatoes too. They're terrific. But if you don't want to wait and you really want to have a ripe tomato, try that in a brown paper bag, not in the refrigerator, but on the countertop or somewhere else with a little slice of apple and give it a week, and it will ripen right up.
I actually, when you were talking about ripening, I had the picture of the apple in the apple slice in the brown paper bag. And I was wondering, is it just for tomatoes, or can you do it with other things?
Oh, too? Yeah, you can do it with just about any vegetable. Yeah,
okay.
Same thing.
All right.
And, of course, it can be your enemy, too, if you have a big bowl of fruit sitting there, and all of a sudden one rots, it starts giving off that ethylene gas. It starts to make the rest of them ripen and over-ripen, and then they all rot very quickly.
So you have to pay attention to your fruit, even when it's in the bowl.
Yes, you have to pay attention every day. Yep. but you know, it's all fun. It's all fun. Don't think of it as a job.
Okay. Well, we are almost out of time here, Bob.
Oh.
Can you believe it already?
Yeah.
So, if you have a question for Bob during the week and you don't think you can hold it till Saturday, you can give us a call. You can give me a call, and I will pass the question along to Bob on next Saturday. Or you can send us an email at garden@wesb.com, or you can just leave us a message on Facebook too. So,
yep.
Anything you want to leave anybody with, Bob?
Yeah, with the gardening, like with Mike's question, you know, watering is key. And once in a while, a very deep, deep soaking watering, that's key.
Okay. All right. Remember that, because I don't think we're going to get rain for a while.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll see everybody next week.